Begin.
Okay, we'll get to that right away.
Okay.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development. It's Thursday, March the 13th, 2003. And at this time, I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 5520, Oregon State Fair and Exposition Center. And at this time, Robin is going to tell us a few things before we proceed.
Just a couple of things. First, you have in front of you an agenda, and on the back side of the agenda is what is planned for next week. We will start hearings on the Bureau of Labor and Industries Monday and Tuesday, and then Wednesday we will hear the Lottery Commission do an overview of their program. We have a little bit of slack in here, so if it turns out that we need more time on either this budget or on the Bureau of Labor and Industries budget, we have some time. Otherwise, you'll get Thursday off.
Oh, don't worry.
And then I've also handed out to you the overview for the Bureau of Labor and Industries for you to take a look at, and that's just for your information. I would normally have handed it out to your offices, but I just took a shortcut.
Mm-hmm. Save walking.
Yep. So with that, I think we're ready to proceed.
All right. Lori Byerly? Good morning.
Good morning, Chair George, members of the subcommittee. In front of, for the record, I'm Lori Byerly from the Department of Administrative Services, Budget and Management, and I'm the analyst assigned to the Oregon State Fair and Exposition Center. You should see a packet looks like this in front of you, and that's what I'll be speaking from as I give a brief overview of the governor's budget for the agency. You'll turn to page 2 of that handout. You'll see a table that gives kind of a comparison of the state fair's budget over the most recent history. Over on the far right, there's a couple of columns that give some percentage changes. That first column shows the difference between the 2001-03 close of session budget and the governor's 2003-05 budget. And you'll see since that point in time, the total funds budget for the agency has decreased by 27.4%, and this is due to reductions in general fund that were made over the course of the 2001-03 biennium. Those reductions have been rolled forward into 2003-05. The next page, page 3, shows you a snapshot of how the department's funds are categorized for expenditures. You'll see that the bulk of the department's revenue and expenditures is other funds. These dollars come from revenues that the fair generates through its activities, through the annual state fair, and through exposition center operations. There's a portion of the budget, $1.2 million, that's other funds non-limited. This is specifically for payments on revenue bonds that were refunded back in 1996. There's $1.4 million in general funds. This is general funds the agency uses to help maintain its cash flow and cash balances. The other fund portion of its revenue is not sufficient enough to allow the agency to operate on a year-round basis without dipping below a zero cash balance. If you look at the lottery funds, you'll see $4.4 million in lottery funds. This is lottery funds coming to the agency for debt service on lottery bonds that have been issued to support capital construction projects at the fair. Up through the 2001-03 biennium, there's about $20.5 million in lottery bonds that have been sold to support projects out there, including some remodeling, some additional structures, and basic infrastructure improvements out of the state fairgrounds. The department has a detailed master plan which lays out a program for refurbishing and bringing those facilities up to conditions that allow it to maximize its use of other funds, revenue, to support those activities out there. Page 4 of the handout gives you a brief outline of kind of what's in the governor's budget for 03-05. Like I said before, this budget is a decrease from what the agency started out with at the beginning of 2001-03. Changes that were made through the special sessions during the 2001-03 biennium accounted for about $220,000 in general fund reductions that were made in the budget. The agency has been able to work with these reductions by increasing its recycling efforts, providing less live entertainment, finding some savings in some of its programs, such as the arts and crafts program, livestock and equine programs, and agricultural and horticultural programs. These are programs that primarily occur during the annual state fair. The department has also deferred some maintenance and repair projects in order to manage its cash flow within the existing resources and the reduced amount of general fund. Page 5 indicates what's in the budget. The 2003-05 governor's budget does maintain core fair programs. It does provide additional resources to market and operate the new pavilion. It does support increases in security and contract expenditures. The department has incurred some additional costs for operating of security during the annual state fair, primarily as a result of measures taken after the 9/11 incident, a higher awareness of security needs and having to ramp up some of those activities. The budget also includes the required debt service payments for various revenue bonds. As I said earlier, the portion of these expenditures are made from non-limited, but the bulk of them, about $4.4 million, comes from lottery funds in relationship to the bonds that were sold to support the Apple construction of the fairgrounds. Page 6 shows how the department's $19 million total fund budget is split between operations and debt service. You'll see the bulk of it is in the operations area. 6% is in debt service non-limited. Page 7 shows how the department's budget is split by expenditure category. Personal services, 34.8% of the budget, 33.7% in service supply, and 30% in debt service. This shows the comparison across the expenditure categories.
Let's send a little more.
On page 6, your debt service is non-limited.
Chair George, Senator Morris, yes, a portion of the debt service is non-limited. The lottery funds that comes in for debt service shows up in the operations side. If you look at page 8, the way we developed the 2003-05 governor's budget was we started with the amount of funding that the agency had for 2001-03, which was 26.4 total funds. We looked at legislative actions that occurred through 2002 over this last biennium. House Bill 5575, which was passed during the 2002 second special session, eliminated $120,000 in general fund, which the department had managed through program savings. That was included as an adjustment to 2003-05. We also made some base budget adjustments for position actions and compensation plan changes. There will be some of those changes backed out as a result of continuing work we're doing to reverse some merit and management increased salary actions for 2003-05, but that adjustment has not yet been made. If you look on page 9, continuing to develop the budget, we put in what we call essential packages. Package 010 are some adjustments for personal service type expenditures. The department uses a large temporary workforce when it puts on the annual state fair. And that workforce has become organized under the union most recently during this last state fair, and that has driven some increases in the cost of getting that temporary labor. So you'll see an $88,000 increase in this line item. A big portion of that is due to increased costs for temporary services during the annual state fair. Package 020.
Lori?
Yes.
We're seeing mass transit tax in almost every budget. Well, how much is it for this budget?
6%. Chair George, members of the subcommittee, it's 0.006, and that's it's a percentage. It's percentage of base payroll salary costs.
Okay. Yes.
And Chair George, members of the subcommittee, you'll see that in most budgets where you find staff that are located in the Valley Corridor and in any area where there's mass transit. And most state agencies will have at least a portion of their employees in those areas. Package 020 has some program adjustments. This is an area where one-time expenditures and costs are phased out of the budget. We made an adjustment and reduced $11,000 other funds. The department has an energy loan it's repaying, and based on the way that debt service schedule actually plays out, we had over-budgeted those payments. So we backed out a little bit of that to make it match up with a debt service repayment schedule.
Lori, could you describe the energy loan? What exactly is that?
Chair George, members of the subcommittee, the department had received a loan, I believe, via the Department of Energy, and I can't remember when it was. When Katie speaks, she could probably give you some specifics. What year was it?
It would have been... Senator
George. Identify yourself for record, too.
For the
record, my name is Clifton Lewis. I'm the Director of Business Services for the Oregon State Fair and Exposition Center. The energy loan was engaged in with the Department of Energy to improve energy efficiency for the heating air conditioning units on top of one of our larger buildings. This occurred in 1992. The issue was the units were driven by electricity. Mm-hmm. And we converted them to gas, and the savings between using electricity and gas to drive the HVAC system is what's being used to pay the debt service. It's been very successful.
Moving on to package 030. This is the package that we use to increase line items for standard inflation and price list adjustments. That line item increased the department's budget by $177,000 total funds. This is another area that we'll likely see some adjustments as inflation for some items will likely be adjusted as a result of continuing actions both in relationship to state government service charges and standard inflation.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Friedman.
Back on 010. What is the range scale for those temporary people, and how many are we talking about?
Chair George, Representative Krieger, I believe Ms. Kam could probably speak more specifically to that question.
Chair George, Senator Krieger, Representative Krieger, I'm sorry. We put on, there's actually two scales that we use, okay? We put on about 650 temporary employees. If they are hired during June 15th through September 30th, then we call what we call a fair rate, which is around, I think, $7 to $7.50 an hour. If they are hired at another time, even if they work through that period, then they are at a union rate, and I want to say that's at $9.50. About $9.50 an hour starting. It depends on the classification. For example, if we hire somebody to do electrical work, obviously it's going to be higher. But generally, the laborers are running about $9.50.
Thank you. Moving on to page 10, please. Policy packages that are included in the 2003-05 governor's budget. Policy package 081 accommodates actions taken during the 2002 special session. This package eliminates cost of living increases for the agency director. Package 091, the 2002 fifth special session actions rolled forward, reduces the budget by $100,000. This is rolling forward, again, actions that occurred during the current biennium. This will reduce the department's ability to pay some expenditures for maintenance and repair of fairground buildings. Package 101, pavilion startup requirements. As a result of actions approved by the legislature in the department's 2003 budget, the department is scheduled to begin construction of a pavilion building, which should be completed sometime mid to late summer of August 2004. In order to operate that building, the department needs additional staff to run that. This package provides the staffing for that. A lot of these positions are actually phased in later in the biennium, but some of them do begin in the beginning of the biennium in July 2003. The special concern is trying to get the position that's going to manage the sales of that building in order to be able to book that building and bring in the revenue that's going to help support those ongoing functions. That package in the amount of $1 million should be able to provide salary and equipment and supplies to staff and operate and make that building functional for the agency. Package 102, exposition support, is a package of about $350,000. This package adds one position and expenditure limitation to provide security and other services to exposition clients. I believe I mentioned that the department's security expenditures had increased efforts in that area. They need additional limitation to spend their other funds revenue to support those activities. They're also experiencing an increase in the volume of exposition clients. They need a position to be able to help service those clients when they come in with setting up their events and taking them down and providing support while those clients are using the facility.
Senator Dukes first, and Representative Krieger.
Exposition just meaning the fairgrounds area?
Chair George, Senator Dukes. Basically, when we talk about the fair's programs, and Ms. Cannon can discuss this a little bit more when we get into the agency kind of overview, but when we talk about state fair, the fair piece, we're talking primarily about the annual state fair and that time period of 6 months that it takes to bring that thing up and running and manage that. We talk exposition, we're talking when the RV show comes in or the home and garden show comes in or those other entities come in during the off season and rent the facility and make use of that space. So that's kind of the difference between the two program areas.
Ben Krieger?
That multi-purpose pavilion, 8 new positions, it looks like a lot of dollars, but what is that pavilion going to bring as far as income projected? I don't realize.
Chair George, Representative Krieger, this particular biennium, it will bring approximately $500,000 in as far as revenue because we're going to open that up for exposition rentals starting October of 2004. The projection that we have on this particular facility, after about 3 to 4 years when it's up on plane, it should net about $500,000 a year.
Okay. Oh, Senator Morris?
Maybe I was asleep. Could we go back to page 2?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Did I miss the explanation why other funds dropped by something like this?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I actually covered that in my high-level overview yesterday, but I think I probably I think I skirted over it. Basically, what you see in 9901 and 0103 is the infusion of just about $10 million each biennium from lottery bond sales. And that's the money that is used for the capital construction and renovation. And there isn't a bond sale projected for 03-05, and so that's the difference.
Chair George, Senator Morris, if I may add, although that construction is not complete, mm-hmm. but it was budgeted for the 0103 right. biennium. So even though that building's not finished, the dollars don't show up in the 0305 budget because of the way the capital construction expenditures work within the budget. George, members of the subcommittee, that completes my presentation of the governor's budget. And unless there's any additional questions, I'm done.
Well, thank you very much. Okay, we're back to you.
Senator George, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Katie Cannon. I'm the director of the Oregon State Fair. With me today, I have Pete McCabe, who is our vice chair of our commission. As I mentioned yesterday, our chair would have been here, but she's in the hospital from surgery. So Pete offered to come over from Central Oregon to address the committee.
Senator George, committee members, thank you for having us here this morning. On behalf of the State Fair Commission, we encourage you to support the...
For the record, your name?
Pete McCabe.
Okay, thanks.
Anyway, as this is my first hearing, I'm somewhat nervous this morning, not knowing, but...
talking to a farmer.
Yeah, a farmer, a tree farmer.
Yeah, tree farmer.
A guy with rocks.
Yeah. I get as nervous as you do.
But I would just like to say that on behalf of the commission that we have a great staff at the Oregon State Fair and they've done a tremendous job in complying with the mandates that was set up in the subcommittee in around the 1990s to carry out the different projects that we have going as far as the buildings and getting the buildings renovated, getting the historical buildings in shape and doing that, and they've just done a tremendous job of it. They've put together some great plans, and I guess at this time I'll turn it over to Katie and she can do her thing. And
Senator George, members of the committee, he's being a little modest too. He's been in the fair business for quite a while. He was a fair board member of a fair in Central Oregon, so he knows the business pretty well. Plus, he's a banker, so he keeps us keeps us online as far as the budget is concerned.
That's why he's not talking,
right? I will start my presentation now. It is in the blue book. And I think, Senator Jukes, there are a couple of, I think Cliff made some changes. We had a link that we discovered last night in the cash flow, and so we changed a few of the charts in there, because, and it was to the positive, so we were happy about that. So getting started, first of all, the Oregon State Fair and Exposition Center has a mission and statute. It basically is four different things. It's production of the annual state fair. It's to operate and maintain the exposition center, that other 11 months of facility rentals, maintain the agency's assets, which we've tried diligently to do, and to disseminate knowledge, which we do not only during the annual state fair, but through these other expo events that we have. I'll give you a brief history so you know that we have been scrutinized considerably over the last few years. But I do have a little extensive summary in the back, and so I just tab that. I'm going to hit some high points. In the 1997 Joint Legislative Audit Committee, Senator Durfler was the one that headed this up, and they, in a nutshell, what they found is that the fair is not self-sufficient. Back in the early 80s, we were told basically to be self-sufficient. And with that, we were handling our operations and programming, but we were not handling the maintenance of the facilities. But that was, and we did not receive any general, I think maybe in the early 80s, I think there might have been $25,000 of general fund, but in the 1980s, we did not receive any general fund at all. And not until, I think, 1997, 96 or 97, then we had some general fund. And they also looked at other comparable fairs around the United States and found out that almost all fairs receive some kind of subsidy, either in capital construction or in operations. The 1999 legislature approved a subsidy of $10.2 million of lottery-backed bonding for those repairs because of some studies that were done. They also, but with that, they provided $2 million right away because there were some things that needed to be done out there, but they held on to $8.2 million until several things happened. One, the interim, joint interim task force was formed, and they looked at the fair, as Senator Winters pointed out yesterday, to determine whether it should continue to exist. And if so, what was going to need to be done? So they developed a strategic plan and a facility master plan. After those two pieces were done, then they provided the remaining $8.2 million to start implementing the master plan, which was predominantly with repair and maintenance, but there's about $2 million that went to two replacement facilities and saving the poultry barn, which literally the walls were shifting on it. And so they completed that. And the 2001 legislature provided an additional $10 million in lottery-backed bonds to further the facility master plan. And in that, the highest priority was this multi-purpose pavilion, which should open in July of 2004. We should break ground this coming July. In 2001, the agency goals, we had six of them. The first one was to improve net profit. I mean, obviously, we were in some financial trouble, so we needed to get our financial house in order. With that, just some highlights. We've increased exposition rental by almost 25%. And I know that the lady that's doing the sales told me that she has gotten a commitment in 2006 for a 1,000 RV rally at the fair, and she's working on one for 2,000 RVs to come in. So we've increased fair revenue over the 2 years of 4.2%, decreased expenses by 2.9%, and we've increased the cash balances, the ending cash balance, by $530,000. Literally, when I came in to the fair in May of 2000, we looked at the cash balances, cash flow, and determined we could have a $1 million deficit. So we have made a tremendous increase in the cash balances there. As you can see from the chart in the bottom of page 5, the bottom line there is actually 1999 cash balances per month. And the top line with the little dots on it, that is this year. We have actuals through January, and so there has been a considerable increase in the cash balances there.
Katie, that does not include any of the capital money that's been unexpended. Okay.
This doesn't even, Senator George, this does not even include general fund. because to me my measure is if I measure the other funds, then I know how well we're doing, because I can play games with a general fund by when I put it into the cash flow. But this tells me right down to the bottom line, are we making improvements? The second goal was to improve services and increase revenue. We're not like DMV in that you have to go there to get your license, okay? They don't have to come to our fair. So we operate in many respects like a private business would. If we don't provide a product and service that's in demand, they're not going to come. And along those lines, customer service is one of the key things that we have to offer. I have to say I'm proud of the fact that when we do our exit poll, the thing that comes out on top is it's the families feel like it's a safe event for family and friends. And I have to put a plug in here for the state police, because they are our law enforcement agency of record, and I have to give them a great deal of credit for that atmosphere of safety. Lieutenant Gower, who some of you may know quite well, who's in charge of the Capitol, also is in charge of our police force out there. Also, a couple other things, that, you know, the fact that the fairground's clean and attractive, and the overall courtesy of the staff, those are some of the key points. Nobody pays a lot of money to go to Disneyland to have a bad time or to a dirty event or a safe event. And if we get into a high-risk event, then we are going to have high-risk people there instead of families, and we can't afford that.
Representative Greer.
I agree with what you're saying here. I did note that it seemed like the rides for kids were extremely high in proportion to going to the local county fairs. Do you get a percentage of that? And my concern was low-income and middle-income people having access. I mean, if you take a couple of kids to the fair and put them on a half a dozen rides, and there's 3 days' salary just about for those people. So do you just address that a little bit?
Senator, Chair George, Representative Krieger. We, on the rides, we take 40% of the ride gross, which is pretty standard for our size of fair when we looked at it, because I did an extensive study on that, looking at what a comparable fair would charge. We offer some other promotions, though, that will help those families. First of all, on the first Friday, there are free rides for 2 hours for anybody that wants to come. We also have a $1 per ride on the first Monday. So, and that's from, this year will be from noon to 6. And then we have a wristband where for $17, then you can buy a wristband and ride all day until 6 o'clock. Actually, you do honor those after that, too. So we do, our prices may appear high, but we do provide some other promotions so we can make sure and give those families a value. The third goal was to complete the renovation and repair. The first $10.2 million, I would have to say, there's a little bit of money left, less than $100,000, but we have completed all the repairs that we set out to do. It still leaves about $5 million worth of deferred maintenance. But the major buildings have all been repaired and they're in good shape. Implement the strategic plan and facility master plan. I won't go into detail about that, but the task force put an extensive strategic plan together, and that's attachment A. And every 6 months, we sit down with the task force and we review what we have done to make progress on that plan. To me, it's a very well laid out plan for us, and it's given us good direction. Number five, develop a not-for-profit foundation. I have to say this is the hardest one I've ever done in my life. we've had a steering committee working on this. We do have the mission, purpose, and bylaws drafted, and we're ready to submit that. We are soliciting board members. We do have our first board member. Once that board gets together, then they will review those bylaws, but we are moving forward with that. Senate President Courtney and Senator Winters have also submitted a bill that will allow us to have a working relationship with that foundation, because right now, once it's legally formed, I have to say arm's length, you know, guess what we want, guess what we need, and it doesn't make sense. And if somebody wants to give us $10 million, that I have to tell them that they have to go buy a ticket to get in. So we're trying to have a reasonable working relationship with them. And on number, the goal, the sixth goal is to continue to expand statewide partnerships. We have put a lot of effort into this. We have a collaboration committee, which Lynn Wolf on our staff has done a tremendous job in working with the county fairs to make sure that we have a good working partnership. There is a whole list of things in Attachment B that we've been doing. Private and nonprofit sponsorships is another area. We have, I think, the miracle worker on our staff. Last year, in a down year, she sold over a quarter million dollars in cash sponsorships and another quarter of a million of in-kind. I'm amazed all the time at what this woman can do. For example, one thing that she put together was the Habitat for Humanity House. And remember that hour that Bob Repine said he owed me? He's one of our partners in this, and I'm going to have him out pounding nails for that hour that he said he owes me from yesterday. And they hooked up with Palm Harbor Homes, and Palm Harbor Homes actually got all the materials donated for the Habitat House that we built during the fair. And moved right around to the backside of our property because that's where the lots are for Habitat House. We also had a partnership with West Coast Bank and the Oregon Food Bank the very first day, which that's another good bargain for those families because on opening day you can get into the fair for a dollar, and this year we're going to ask for, instead of one can of food, two cans of food. So we call it the 1-2 punch. Last year we collected over 21,000 pounds of food in one day over there. So, but those are the type of partnerships. Like I'd mentioned, Bob Repine's agency was a partner with the Habitat House. We do a lot of work with the Oregon military. Department of Agriculture, the state vet, to me, is worth his weight in gold. He's been working with us very closely with the E. coli issue and some of the other diseases that some of the livestock are affected with.
Katie, before we go on talking about continuing to expand statewide partnerships, every year I get the fun job of moving those big, heavy panels from the state fair. Is there any thought of coming up with something lighter? I mean, I've raised livestock all my life, and I've never seen anything like those. And
Senator George.
They're a dangerous thing to move.
Yes. Chair George, yes, they are quite heavy. Actually, there are several things that we use those for. Sometimes if we have a rodeo, they'll be used for rodeo, which they need to be pretty sturdy. So they kind of end up being multi-purpose. You know, they may have longhorns in them one day, and then 2 weeks from that, they might be used for a rodeo. But I realize they are cumbersome, and they are large.
They're dangerous. I mean, I worry about fingers and backs.
Yeah.
And when I dump a load of them in the middle of the street, I was worried about tying them down.
Chair George, you are correct. We do a lot of exchanging of equipment between the county fairs and the state fair all the time, because if we all had to own the equipment, it would be just too costly. So we do a lot of that. And I'm sorry about those big panels, but I don't know how to make them any smaller.
Maybe we can install them permanently and get some new lighter models.
Well, the only thing, if we install them permanently, then the county fairs can't use them is the problem.
Right. No, I was thinking about then buying some others then.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm going to be with the county fairs this afternoon, so I'll mention that you want lighter panels.
What do we need in the budget for those?
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I might fire up the old welder back at the shop.
Yeah.
Well, that's actually offering. We could.
Our organization at the State Fair is pretty simple. We have administration, which does the overall management of the agency, and then the operations, which maintains and repairs the 185 acres. And the other thing that this department does is that they provide all the setup and tear down and customer service for our expo events. I mean, basically, once we get the customers there, these are the guys that keep them. And with the marketing, our marketing department not only does the fairtime promotion and advertising, but it also does the facility rental program, which Debbie has increased that program by 25%. And then Lynn's in charge of the county fair relations and community relations, too. I look at it from an operational standpoint, if you look at just our sources of operating revenue, not bond debt payment, not capital construction, the general fund pays for about 10% of it. The state fair pays 76%, and the expo events pays 14%. We have put a great deal of emphasis on expo events because the state fair revenue is kind of like being a farmer, that you can put the best seed in the ground and the best fertilizer, and then you get, you know, hail the day that you're supposed to harvest it. Well, the state fair can be the same thing, is that, and I've seen it in my lifetime here, because this is my third round at the fair. I started there as a kid the first time, and I saw it where it rained for over half the fair, and that is absolutely devastating. So I'm trying to balance that out with putting more emphasis on the expo events so you don't have all your eggs in one basket. But the state fair, we get revenue there from admissions, parking, carnival, commercial exhibits, food concessions, sponsorships, and entry fees. Where the exposition event rent revenue comes for facility rental, equipment rental, parking, labor, and food concessions. And really where we make our money is in the parking and the food concessions. The annual revenue, as you can see, there's a historical chart there that kind of gives you an idea that at least we are heading in the right direction as far as increasing revenue. And also the projected expenditures, if you look at those, we've forced those down, even though we have increasing costs, and I'll show you a little later some of the things that really are impacting us considerably. And then with the new pavilion, those are the little kind of the white parts of the 03 and 04 bars there. That would be how the pavilion would be, the expenditures in the pavilion area. The state fair for customers and stakeholders is a 12-day event that educates the public about Oregon's agricultural, natural resources, industry, art, entertainment, governmental agencies, 4-H and FFA programs. Now, we get approximately 400,000 in total attendance. And I have to tell you right now, these are audited numbers. A lot of fairs do clicker counts or they do a factor, but we use audited numbers. I can trace these numbers back to either a person buying a ticket or a volunteer's name on a line. Even when my husband comes, he buys his ticket. I charge him for parking, and I charge him for admissions. Pardon, my husband, yes. And he comes out and follows me around for about 10 hours. The exposition facility rentals, we do about 281 events here. It says 271. Correct that, please. It was a typo on my part. It's 281 events. And so we have continued to increase that. We will continue. And as far as a lot of people come back year after year. In fact, we're literally working on RV rallies in 06 and 07 right now. In fact, 07, I didn't tell you that one. That one could be a 5,000 RV rally. And so we're pretty excited about that one, but that one's not a done deal yet. And let's see. And customers and stakeholders, we provide a service for a lot of state, regional, and national industries, breed associations, and the county fairs also. Because the county fairs, they feed into us. The 4-H and FFA kids, in fact, I remember one 4-H kid, she said what she works for all year is to make it to the state fair. That's why she puts her project together. In fact, I think we have some 4-Hers here today and some FFA kids, and they'll kind of tell you how important it is to them. Same way that the Oregon agencies, agricultural commodities, and commissions, we do a lot of work with those. If you, just jumping down to the benefits to Oregon, the economic impact, in 1998, the Atkinson School of Business at Willamette did an economic impact study. And so, first of all, that study is several years old. Second of all, when you read the study, you find out they only looked at the expenditure of the seven largest events that we had. We do 281. So I think this figure is low. But it's $137 million. Exposition of events is the biggest impact, and it's $117 million with State Fair at $20 million. And the total economic impact outside of Salem-Keizer area is $54 million, which is 45%. So when people say, oh, this is just a Salem thing, it may be a Salem thing, but it's bringing dollars to other parts of Oregon. And overall, it's estimated that there's about 9,200 jobs that are created between fair time and expo events. During the state fair, we provide it's one place to where we reach a massive number of people and deliver information about various industries, association interests, and consumer protection. We have about 60 booths, and I'm talking about the commercial booths. You know, the, next to the slicer dicers, you're going to have, you know, some charity or political association that is going to be providing information to the public. And over half our people go into the, no, actually more than half of the people go into those commercial exhibit booths. About half of those people actually buy something when they're in those booths. We also have commodity industry booths. We have approximately 18 of those. Now, we showcase talent and contributions of the state's economy, communities, and interests. I think it's amazing when you think about it. We have over 4,200 exhibitors. Now think about it. They don't have to exhibit here. They are things that they feel, you know, they've either created, they've developed, they've raised, or they've collected. And they take the interest and the time to submit those to the state fair. And you wonder why. Why did they do that? And it all came about to me one time when I was actually interim director the last time I was there, that I went to the floral awards ceremony. And it was for the roses. And I can still see this woman's face when she got up, because she got the blue ribbon for the rose. And all at once I realized what it was really all about. Because she had worked on that one rose all year. And this was, it made her, the pride in herself was just, I mean, you could just see it. And if you've ever been out, if you have not at your county fairs gone and sat down with those 4-H and FFA kids when they're doing the interviews, that is an experience. And you need to do it several years, because you'll see this kid just starting out, and when they finally get to be seniors, I'll tell you, they've got it down, and they have... You can't believe what 4-H and FFA teaches to these kids. So I just think it's amazing. We have 3,800 kids that come from county fairs to the state fair. And that one girl, I remember her telling me she works all year and her goal is to make it to the state fair. So we have a considerable amount of benefit that we offer to Oregon. If, you know, employment opportunities, just our payroll is 648 people. And sometimes it's the kid's first job. Now, we're getting them at an older age now. I mean, we don't get those 14-year-olds so much anymore. But it's their first job, and sometimes that's the greatest experience. And I literally was flipping hamburgers when I was 14 years old in the grandstand for Pollen Helen Ale. And it was my first job, and it's still memorable for me. The other thing the fair does, we provide opportunities that you may not be aware of. The food drive, like I mentioned, we collect 21,000 pounds of food just in one day. The Habitat for Humanity house, they had 400 volunteers to put that house up. They put it up in about 10 days. 250 of those volunteers were new to them. They had never been on a Habitat house before. So it's a tremendous, and plus they got cash donations to Habitat for Humanity. The Kiwanis, I always wonder, you know, they had that nice little car out there that they sell raffle tickets for. Those guys earn about $25,000 for Dornbecker's Hospital in the 12 days of the fair. The Rotary, they have a bingo game out there. They earn $18,000 for Boys and Girls Club here in Salem. So there are some great opportunities for charitable nonprofits out there to earn money for their events. The exposition, I've covered some of this with the 281 events. We do about 924 building use days. The economic impact is tremendous. The seven largest events in 1998, their expenditures were $33 million. You know, that was their economic impact, just those, and we do 281. The other thing too, we don't just bring people in, you know, that are local people into the state fair. We do a lot of regional and national events. Our horse shows, we're getting well known for our horse shows. We can stable up to 800 horses out there. We're the biggest one around here as far as the stabling is concerned. Region 4 Arabians is huge, and they do bring in about, they take up 800 stalls. That the Manufactured Home Show comes out there, and yes, the locals come and look at the show, but that is also a dealer show that brings people from all over, you know, the Western United States. Motocross, that big livestock barn, we fill that full of dirt in the wintertime, and it's the only indoor motocross anywhere, so they come from multiple states, you know, on some of the rallies that they have there. The RV rally is getting to be big money for us. We had a couple last year that had about 450 RVs apiece. And it's good economic impact, too, because Monaco puts those on, and they sell about 10% of the total number of RVs that they've got out there. They sell 10% new ones. And the Monaco coaches are running, you know, they run about $300,000. That's kind of the starting price. And so there's some economic impact there, too. I'm going to kind of jump through some things because I know, I think Robin said I've got an hour. and some of these things we've already talked about. Major program changes on page 18. When we, in 2000, when I came back there, we started looking at the organization. We laid off 15% of our staff at that point, which was very hard to do. And in that, we started a program to increase sales. So, you know, you've got one kind of working the other. Two executives left in spring of 2000, and we reduced the temporary staff by approximately 100 people during fair. Sponsorship, I hired one person to do nothing but sell sponsorships. In the first 90 days, she sold, what was it? I want to say about $80,000 worth of cash sponsorships, which is amazing because people's budgets are already set and put together. There's the figures there that what she sold this last year. Now, this year may be a little tougher with cash sponsorships, but we'll see how it goes. I'm always amazed at what she does. The facility rental program, as I mentioned, I changed one lady's position to 60% of her time selling, and we've seen the benefits of that. She's increased it by 25%. We took steps to control cost. We budget based on a monthly demand schedule. We put an actual cash flow model together so we can project out. I mean, I project out now for 05, 07, and beyond because I need to know what we do this biennium, how is that going to impact us the next biennium. We look at that every month. I look at expenses every month. The model has been a tremendous tool. We've reduced travel. We restricted overtime. Reduction in fair entertainment, I cut about $200,000 out of that budget. That may be a mistake. Because even though, I mean, people say that, oh, entertainment, you know, it's just entertainment. But I'll tell you, it brings people in so you can pay for the open class, the livestock, the 4-H, the FFA. You have to have that revenue. Last year I had my worst year in entertainment that I've ever had. 8 weeks out from the fair, I had four openings. I mean, if you had a heartbeat and could sing, I was willing to take you. but I had the worst. And I think if I was down about 6% in revenue last year, if I had had a decent, if I did, even had an average year in concerts, I don't think I would have had that decrease. We increased in-kind sponsorships. For example, Icon gives us all of our paper. And our during fair, they give us all of our copy machines for all of our departments. So we look at those things. We reduced energy and water usage. The administrative costs, we have shoved those down, so we're at a lower percentage now. And we run pretty efficiently out there. The outcome of the 201 legislative funding, as I said, we increased expo rentals and fairtime revenue. We've improved net profit. We've improved or maintained a high level of customer service. We have the $10.2 million. We've almost completed all of that, repair and maintenance in those new buildings. We are now working on the next $10 million, which is the new pavilion. We've demolished the grandstand, which actually kind of tore at my heart a bit because that's where I started. But it needed to go. I couldn't maintain it. It was $5 million to get it up to code, and I just didn't have the backing from the racing, you know. And so the multi-purpose pavilion, we're in the process of design at this point, and we will break ground in July, probably late July, and then it should be completed the summer of 2003. On major budgetary issues, first of all, I think most of you are aware, we work off of cash flow. You know, when I left in 95, there was a considerable operating fund reserve. Over time, it went down, and we are to the point where I, every once in a while, will have a few sleepless nights. But I think right now we're past that. But with the multi-purpose pavilion, that will put some more pressure on that cash flow. So we're on a six-year plan to try to get the fair where the programming and the operations are self-sufficient. And that really is my goal, is to get that done. We know that as the task force and the audit committee stated, we will not be able to pay major maintenance to the state assets or debt service. But our goal is to become self-sufficient. When I say that, that's not just like, you know, me having sleepless nights and but making it through. You need to have enough money in reserve. So if I have one fair that has 10 days of rain out of 12, that I can have enough money that I can put on, I can start the next fair up, because that's where I make 74% of my revenue. And so I have to have some of those cash balances in there, so when things aren't going right, and I need to build those up. The debt service, we still have revenue bonds that we are paying. So we are, even though they said we can't afford to pay debt service, we are paying debt service, and those will retire in October of 06. And so we're almost done with those. But I am very concerned about this particular biennium, because in the second half, with the pavilion coming on and the bond debts, and we do have 1 year's worth of bond debt in reserve, that I'm afraid that if we get cut so low in general fund, I can't cash flow that, and I can't make my bond payment in the second year. I'll be okay in the first year. So that is a concern. The pavilion startup, you know, we have the $10 million for building the building, but no operating fund was provided to operate it. So we are trying to take that out of our cash flow, too. And I think I can cash flow it. It gets a little slim, and you'll see on a chart that I've got a few pages back that I've got a couple nights that I'll probably be up for a couple of months, actually. But that pavilion nets out the first year about, it's going to take me about $444,000 more to get it started up and going, because we will have some revenue in there, but that's the net. And so if my general fund is cut down considerably, I have that issue there that I can't cash flow that building. I can't make it work. Deferred maintenance is always an issue. I hope we have about $5 million left and that we need to do. I also don't want to get down the road and have, of course, I'll be gone in 10 years, but that where we're back and saying, you know, well, we've let the buildings go down again. My plan is I've got a plan together for roof replacement, that sort of thing, and the intent from the budget hearing last year and the task force is that general fund eventually will be moved over and used to take care of that maintenance on those buildings. And then, you know, be able to put roofs on and whatever needs to be done. The Joint Interim Task Force Strategic Plan, like I said, I have a strong desire and obligation to continue with that strategic plan because I think it's a well-developed plan. The cost of temporary labor is expected to increase, not just because the minimum wage is going up. I mean, that will force it up, and then every year it's going to go up. But also I have to pay those employees, as I had mentioned to Representative Krieger, there's some of them that are unionized to the point where I have to pay them a higher rate. And the increased cost of permanent employee benefits. To give you an idea of what the dollars mean, you know, what they really are, on page 25, the impact on cash flow and services. The union wage for temporary employees, we've heard that is going to cost us $62,000 more. That's additional than what we're paying now. The minimum wage is going to cost us another $64,000. Increased cost of health benefits is $144,000. Increased cost of PERS, $82,000. Increased cost of security is $76,000. And I put a plus behind it because state police, remember, is our law enforcement agency. And I don't have their estimate yet this year. We're working on it. But with everything being cut back, first we weren't even sure if we'd be able to get them. But I think that we're working on that. But I don't know what the price tag's going to be on that. And then the other things that we deal with, the general fund reductions, the revenue bond payment that we have to pay, and the net expense for this cost of the pavilion. And a big concern for me is insufficient staffing for increased business. You know, if we keep trying to bring more and more business in, you know, eventually the staff can only do so much. And then what happens, then our customer service goes down. And we are known for our customer service there. And the availability and cost of entertainment. I spoke to a high school group the other day. We have a small group of high schoolers we bring in, and they tell us what to do with the fair as far as for kids. And I put a whole list of entertainers up there, and they told me the ones they wanted. And when I said Metallica, and I said, well, that's great, but they're $500,000. That's their fee. We had O-Town a few years ago, and I think we paid $35,000-$40,000. Now they want $75,000. And so the availability and cost of entertainment is always an issue. Cash balances, the major budgetary issues, this is what I worry about. These are the cash balances. This does have general fund included in it. It's for 03-04 and 04-05. If you notice, the second year, 04-05, with the pavilion coming online and these increased costs, I will have a few sleepless nights. Now, what you do need to know is the general fund has been spread out evenly over all these months. So I will work with Lori and with Robin in pushing that general fund back to even that out so it's not quite as slim. Because you have to understand, it's not like general fund where it all is there the first of the month. I may have a renter that, pays me 30 days later or 45 days later. And so I don't have it all there on the first of the month. And so when I have a low balance one month, it doesn't give me enough to pay payroll the next month. So I have to do something, and I'll shift the general fund. But it's still slim. I think the thumb rule around here is 3 months. You want a reserve in there that's equal to 3 months of what you're spending that month. And we're not there. That's right. Now, I did, to kind of make to ease your concern here a little bit, I put in another cash balance sheet that also has 05-07 in it. And even the first year 05-07 is slim. I'll have a few sleepless nights there. But you'll notice when I get to the second year, because of the pavilion revenue, the net revenue, that I can breathe again. And so, we will always try to do better than what we've got here. That's kind of the nature. The staff out at the state fair, I've worked at a lot of different places, but I'll tell you, they'll do 110%. And as long as you tell them where the target is, they'll go for it. So I think we'll do better than this, but I am concerned on those 2 months. The governor's budget reductions, Lori pretty much talked about these. So I think I will skip over this unless you have some questions. And if the essential packages aren't funded, probably the package 010, this one with our fair time, our temporary staff, concerns me probably the most, because without those temporaries, and it's not just during fair time, we will put some temporaries on during expo events. If we have 5 events going on at the fair, 2 janitors can't handle it. And so we have to put some temporaries on to take care of that. If we have a quick turnaround time between events, then I may have to bring other crews in to help us clear them out. So the vacancy factor, let me just mention that. If you see our vacancy report, you're going to say, oh, they've got a ton of vacancies. We have seasonal employees that are superintendents for various departments like livestock, art, home ec, and we don't put them on for all year. They come on for maybe 2 months. Or 90 days, depending on the department. So it looks like they're vacant now because they really are. We don't need them at this point. They come on around fair time. We do have one position that it's a trades maintenance worker that we've held off a little bit. I can hold off probably a little bit longer, but eventually I've got to put that position because that's the person, the jack of all trades, that can do the carpentry, the repairs, whatever. And so I can't put that off forever. I think the others Lori covered. In our program option packages, this is an investment. This is an investment in the pavilion startup. It provides 4.125 FTE with this services and supplies, and also some capital outlay, and I'll talk about that in a minute. The 4.125 FTE, it is a whole, this is a high labor facility, and I've been honest with everybody all the way down the line with that. You can't take two people and operate this building. And so I need a salesperson right away. In fact, we're late, to be quite honest. We've been doing some of the work now, but I can only ask him to work 7 days a week. And right now she's doing that to try to get some of these sales in on this building. But I've got to put a sales position on the 1st of July. We have other positions in there. A lot of them are labor to help do set up and tear down. We have an electrician in there because you'd be surprised. A lot of these shows take an electrician. I only have one electrician, and he can't cover all these areas. And so we're expanding that. The S&S is what goes along with the staffing over there. On the capital outlay, we have things like forklifts, scrubbers, some basic equipment that you have to operate the building. We also have some things in there like a scoreboard, and we're working with the Oregon Student Athletic Association because they want to bring some of their tournaments there, so you have to have a basketball floor. I have put those pieces in here. I'm hoping to get some of them sponsored, but I cannot go and sign a contract with OSAA hoping that I'm going to get somebody to donate a floor and then not have it happen. So I've got to have them in the budget. If I can get the scoreboard donated, then I'm going to do that. But I've got to have those pieces somewhere that's a for sure thing. Otherwise, I can't, in all honesty, go sign up OSAA on a tournament because I can't do that if I don't have the equipment to produce their production. On Package 101, it supports the following six-year goals: increase the operating fund reserve, improve the delivery of services, increase sales, and continue to implement the task force strategic and master plan and build public and private partnerships. On Program Option Package 102, this is another labor position. Remember, I reduced labor by 15%. I've increased business by 25%. This is somebody to help. And if I don't do it here, then I do it with temporary people. And to be quite honest, when you bring a new temporary and you put them on a piece of equipment, it never works quite as well as if you have somebody there that knows how to operate the equipment. I mean, we spend more time repairing the equipment than we do with them operating it. So this is one position that we need. It also has $297,000 in services and supplies. About $100,000 of this is for security. And I'm hoping that that is enough to squeeze through with the state police bill and some of the things. We started doing public safety inspections at the gates last year. Most major events do that, where they want to, if you're carrying something in there, they want to take a look at it and see what's in it.
I don't see any mention, so far anyway, of any prison work crew activity. Can you tell us what your experience was with that?
Yeah. Chair George, what we are using right now are community service workers. We used to use Marion County inmate service. We absolutely loved them. They did a superb job. They don't have that program now. So we're going with our community service workers. I have asked Gary, my director of operations, to look at the state prisons again. We have had the inmates from the state prisons out there before. It is a challenge. But we have probably some things that we can get them to do, like cleaning out stalls, where you have the group in one area and they're doing one thing. So, okay. This program option package supports the same goals as program 101, or program option package 101. We put our performance measures, we put financial goals there rather than, how well do we educate people. I don't know I would think it would cost me more to measure that than the benefit I would get from it. So right now our biggest goal is making sure that this place is financially healthy and balancing the needs of the customer so they will come and use our services. And so our performance measures, we look at end of March, which is usually our lowest cash balance of the year, is end of March. And so we've set goals for that for the next 2 years, of 400,000 and 250, which does not meet the 3 month, you know, the three times rule, but it's, we'll be happy if we get here, okay? Fairtime revenue, looking at about, $4.8 million, for Fairtime, and exposition revenue of 04 of 1.3 and of 05 of about $2 million. And we are at 1.2 right now. So the budget notes, I think Robin had mentioned yesterday, is to continue the collaborative efforts to increase revenues, seek strategic partnerships to support the efforts of the Community Partnership Task Force. For example, the sponsorship I had mentioned before, those are partnerships. They're not just donating money to us. It is actually a mutual benefit. The City of Salem, we're working with them on the pavilion construction. One thing that they did at the SDCs were reduced by $225,000 to build this building. And they've assisted us in the design of the sewer system. And that may not sound like any big deal, but when you have livestock in an urban environment and you have runoff and that sort of thing, it's not just, you know, having a sewer. It's having a management plan that goes with it. So some days it goes to storm drain, some days it goes to the sewer. And so it's a little more complicated than a regular sewer system. Work with Marion County Environmental Health and the Department of Agriculture and E. coli Prevention. That's going to be a very hot topic this year in the fair business because of what's happened down at Lane County. We've worked with Marion County for several years in doing preventative programs. We've also worked with them and the Department of Agriculture in putting an overall recommended program, and we're going to put that forth to the spring managers with OFA this year. So we all have some consistent things that we're doing for fairs to protect the public.
Or have you had to meet the requirements, say, for example, of an Oregon dairy, which they must separate water like a roof runoff from anything that would be coming up? So you've had to go, you've met all those now, those requirements? Or
Chair George, yes, we have. We've been working with the City of Salem, and even on the new building, we're looking at the runoff. Probably, I have to say, with one exception, and that is in our racehorse barns, the old barns in the back. Those, we don't put animals back there in the wintertime because of the capacity in the storm and sewer systems back there. And so those roofs are not going separated from the sewer into the storm drains.
Right.
And
here
so, but everything else, yes.
One further question relative to the system development charges. What would have been the total amount for the new buildings if, in fact, they hadn't? We have a possibility of getting a reduction of $250,000.
It would have been $258,000. Yes. All but $33,000. We've worked with the Department of Energy and Portland General Electric to design the multi-purpose pavilion to be energy efficient, and we've worked with them for, you know, actually years on a variety of different projects. Budget note number two, and this, you know, this came out of the recommendation of the Budget Committee last year or last session to continue working with the task force. You know, if this committee would like to do that too, I would appreciate it. It's actually been a really a good asset for us to have the task force on working with the community. So, but that's the pleasure of this committee. And we've met four times with the Community Partnership Task Force, of which Senator Winters is the chair and Senator Courtney is the vice chair, and reported to them. And then we've also gone to the emergency board several times for reporting. And in the process, like I had mentioned before, of the nonprofit foundation, and that there's a bill from Senator Courtney and Winters to allow the working relationship between the two. We didn't have any audits, but we did have an energy review, which we have actually, and remember, we've had increased business, but we reduced energy or electricity use by 15.3%. Now, part of that is because of some of the things that we've done with the renovation projects out there. But and then we've had a 2.4% increase in natural natural gas, but once again, we've had a 25% increase in business. So we're feeling pretty good about those, actually. Property description, we have a 185-acre site with 13 public-use buildings totaling 638,000 square feet. And plus then we have six maintenance and office facilities. I mentioned the $8.2 million being spent to get the buildings up to what they call a B level and $5 million remaining. We've had construction of two smaller buildings and the seismic upgrade and the structural work on the poultry building. And the multi-purpose pavilion started. Information technology system, we're a Macintosh-based system. Some of us are holding out for PCs, but we have kind of a mixture, but they have been integrated together. I'm the only one that wants. There's two people of us that want a PC. The others want Macs. And I've given you a list of interagency and intergovernmental involvement that we have. There's an affirmative action report in here, and I think, Chair George, that is the conclusion of my. I've got 10 minutes to spare.
Great. Senator Morris.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I have several questions.
Certainly.
Okay. Back up to page 25. I appreciate you including the element of PERS. I realize that that's a factor that we haven't been looking at in mm-hmm. these previous budgets. If I divide that by 16 FTE, that's $2,200 per FTE. Are you assuming the current system carried forward, or are you assuming any reforms within the system?
I'm not guessing. Excuse me, Chair George, Senator Morris, I'm not about to guess what the reforms are going to be. So this is carried forward.
Unchanged.
Yeah.
And I guess my question to Robin would be, is that pretty typical per FTE?
I don't know the answer to that. I'd have to double check. There are a number of things in all of the agency budgets that ultimately will be adjusted depending on decisions that are made elsewhere, including changes made to the PERS system and state government charges and other areas which may give this agency and other funds agencies some relief because decisions that we've talked about before in terms of inflation, merit adjustment, and other reductions that should help increase their ending balance.
Another question?
Another question mm-hmm. would be, your business management functions, are they performed by DOS, or do you do that within your department?
Chair George, Senator Morris, it's probably a combination of both. We get a lot of the accounting reports come through DAS. But we do a lot of additional work because we almost need to be able to look at it very carefully on a month-to-month basis. And so we do some additional things. I mean, we break it down by PCA. You know, each, depending on who's responsible for that PCA, we generate additional reports that help them manage that so they know where they're at, so they're not just, you know, saying, I need 10 temporaries and without any idea of what the budget is. And so we probably go into more detail because of the type of operation that we have.
One last question.
Certainly.
I'm trying to remember. Do you have good signage out on the freeway?
Senator George, or Chair George, Senator Morris, I don't know what you would consider good signage. Senator Tricia Smith, several years ago, managed to get us on the interstate signs, that is like an act of Congress. We have signage throughout Salem. We worked with the city of Salem many years ago to be able to route people from the interstates at exits to the amphitheater. So we have some signage. Some of that's getting old, probably needs to be updated. Beyond that, I don't know what you consider good signage, but I mean, we have the basics.
I just hadn't seen it, and I was wondering if it is out there. And I don't remember seeing it.
Senator George, or Chair George, Senator Morris, the other thing, too, that I think we need to do in the future is do better signage on our fairgrounds. I have to work with the city of Salem on that because literally you should only have one reader board for a property. Well, that means I get out of three sides that are exposed to the public, I can only have signs on one. Now, we have a couple that are grandfathered that we keep pasting together, but I do need to work with the City of Salem, so I do a better job. But once we get them to the fairgrounds, I don't lose them in the neighborhoods, and I get them to the building that they need to go to.
Thank you.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair George. I have to add on to what Senator Morris is saying. The signage from a rural perspective is pretty rough. And I support you folks, but I have to tell you, you know, we're used to go to the big pine tree, take a left, and look for the rock. And I have to tell you, when my constituents come to the state fair, we spend about an hour and a half trying to find it. So maybe when ODOT's here, we need to have a conversation right with them.
And that's what I was going to say. If you guys have looked at their budget so far, they have a lot in there for additional electronic signage. And we want to, yes, is it possible for them for an event like this? And it should be, because you're talking about traffic control, to be able to actually put out the, you know, the mobile units, the reader board type things, and notify folks that you would want to use this road and this road. Particularly the whole theory behind the electronic system, you know, where they control it from the central offices, is that it's used to manage large number of people, you know, like we have an influx of folks, so it might be, we will remember to ask that question. But what is your response from the agency relative to any signage, or have you approached them on improvement?
Chair George, I have not approached them in years. The last one was with Senator Smith, and getting us at least listed on the exit signs, because all the exit signs now say fairgrounds.
Everyone here will remind them when they get to the
If you just go to Market Street, you're in good shape. Yeah. If you follow the highway signs, forget it.
But you know Market,
but Market Street does mean you're looking for, like, corn and potato.
Well, first of all, we have to be very, very careful on things that unintended consequences. A lot of the economic development or economic impact on the City of Salem is from people wandering aimlessly. And that could change all of the numbers. You're cutting out a couple meals, maybe some overnight lodging and stuff, so we've got to be careful what we do. One thing to maybe mention to the task force, and I don't think we need to go into this a lot, but two things trouble me about this budget. The restraint on the potential for your needs for temporary workers and your inability to hire a salesperson now. That this is a very entrepreneurial activity, mm-hmm, and somehow we need to come up with maybe a little, either ways to loosen some of the budgetary controls or some ways for that, for your entrepreneurial activities not to be constrained into doing things that don't make sense. I mean, I would assume if one of the reasons you might need more temporary workers would be if you're getting more activity going, which generates revenue, which is
right.
But I think there's probably ways on your unlimited funds and stuff to do that. But I think the ongoing issue of how best to govern the fair and that property as it becomes more and more an expo facility, it seems to me we don't want to artificially constrain it by the fact that we're tied to a biennial budget.
Mm-hmm.
And Metro, when I was on the Metro Council and we had convention center and expo activities and stuff, you had to cut them a lot of slack, because you just can't, it's just a lot harder on that type of an activity to run it. Anyway, that's a little concern, but.
Well, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, much of what we're talking about here is resource driven. And the inability to hire a position to do the marketing has to do with the fact that they don't have the resources to pay for that person. And that's really the point that Katie's trying to make when she's talking about her cash flow, that she's taking a gamble to some extent with the policy option packages she has to get these people on board, because you have to bring them on board before the revenue starts flowing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's quite frankly where the problem is. And And we've had difficulty in the past with the agency overestimating, and this was prior to Katie, overestimating what their resources were going to be and discovering that they literally did not have the money that they had already spent, and they were in front of the emergency board several times to bail them out of that kind of problem. So there's a, you know, there's a tension here. I mean, we expect them to be entrepreneurial, but we don't want them spending money they don't have. So.
Senator Carter.
I just like an organization with a $5 million budget where I was the development officer, the president, CEO, the marketing director, and everything else. And I'm telling you, I haven't had any comments about this budget because she's obviously a miracle worker to be able to do all the things that she's doing for an agency that is still keeping some reality in our lives in terms of kids who still care a lot about their work, kids who really want to be agrarian in nature in a society that is constantly trying to move away from it. And the legislature has decided that the state fair is something that we want. And for some reason, we continue to play mealy mouth about it. And if we want the state fair, and we want it to be a viable entity, and we want to feel very proud of the kids that continue to work day after day to come here and make themselves visible by what they do, then we got to fund it or not fund it. I mean, there's absolutely no doubt about it. And I wish, I'd like to have you stop using the term, I'm losing sleep.
At my age, you always do, though.
You need to define to people what that means. It's not just a matter of losing sleep. Mm. It's just that the resources are not there, and you have to work even harder to try to get them. Mm. And so they need, we, this panel, and other legislators need to know what losing sleep means. Because I think that we can, in our efforts to not sound like moaners and complainers, it would appear to me that in your effort to not moan, groan, and complain, you're using those cute words. But I wouldn't use cute words. I would use words that make a difference in terms of our ears being open to what you really mean. I mean, because I've been there, and I know what that is like. And if the legislature wants a fair, then it's a value judgment. It is a core value decision that we have to fund the agency if we want the fair to maintain its viability in our community. Because other smaller communities around the state come there to show off their kids, to come out, show off their cattle, and they bring entertainment and that kind of stuff. So I'm just through. I just didn't want to say anything but to be there to be supportive when the budgetary time comes. But we've got to do a better job if we're going to expect miracle workers to stay here.
Yes,
Chair George, Representative Hansen, I have to say on the sales position that if it is the wish of this committee, I feel I have enough cash flow at this point to put that person on now, if you want me to do that. I mean, I would like to do that because I'm behind the eight ball now in selling that facility. And if it is the wish of this committee, then I would put in a request to DAS to, and we've looked at having it as a limited duration position in this biennium, but felt it was probably best not to do it. But I do have the cash flow.
Katie, there's no one in private business would be looking towards the building a facility and then not be marketing it now.
Right.
Then, you know. And to me, sometimes it kind of reminds me of dangling the string, you know, and we want you to perform, but we're not going to give you the resources you need to do it. But relative to what Senator Carter said, I'm reminded, and I think I shared it with you the other day, one of the most memorable things that was ever said to me in this building was an older gentleman who made the comment. He said, today you have a choice between the Bloods and the Crips and the 4-H and the FFA. Which choice are you going to make? And you had mentioned the other day about some of the gang issues. And this just isn't agrarian now. I mean, we're not called future farmers anymore. We're called FFA. So reaching out to all the communities in the state, you know, with activities that are very, very positive. In fact, most of us who remember when the Sim and Cam was sold, it was supposed to have been a parallel to what happens within particularly the 4-H and FFA programs as far as getting things that young people can get focused on and do productive work with. So we've failed to deliver on that one, too. Any further comments or questions before we...
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dixon, I have this topic. Any budgets.
Right.
And there's a question that is being left on the table. And even though we have not talked about doing any budgets, it would appear to me this is a kind of specialized request that we might need to take this before the full committee, before the leadership.
Mm-hmm. I'm going
to
go there today.
These questions, because there is no doubt. Now, we can take general fund dollars away, and you can look forward to a negative bottom line, or we can say to her that she can hire a salesperson, because it's going to take a slick one at this point in time to get the job done. Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these are tough times to sell.
Because this is basically April, and the fair is in June, July, and August, or July, August, September, mm-hmm. whatever it is. Again, another pulling a rabbit out of the hat or something. They can't wait.
But, Mr. Chair, I wouldn't want to leave her with the thought that, you know, well, the subcommittee thinks it's a great idea, so go out and hire somebody, because
right. no.
mm-hmm. we don't have the authority at this
right.
point to, we might all agree it's a great idea, but we don't have the authority to encourage you to get involved in that kind of a situation and then find out that we, that the powers that be yanked your money out from underneath you. So
when I sound the bottom, I'll let you know what I see. Senator Morris.
Thank you. But to follow up on Senator Carter and Senator Duke, why can't we move this process at least up mm-hmm. to the co-chair level
mm-hmm.
and get some buy-in? Because if we wait until this is finally cast,
yeah.
it's a handicap that shouldn't be there. I don't look at this operation as the same way I do other budgets.
Mm-hmm.
This is a business.
Sorry.
And, you know, either we're in the business of the exposition business or we're not. And if we're in it, let's take care of it. And it's a timing issue on cash flow. This person should be able to more than cover, definitely more than cover the cost of their salary and benefits. So let's move this thing along and get it going so they can be successful.
Yes, do send some room to maybe possibly.
Mr. Chair,
yeah, right.
committee, so your staff knows what to do.
Yeah.
Well, is the committee discussing restoring the general fund reduction? Because that's the only additional resources that are available. That is, they operate within the revenue that they produce, and then the state has agreed to provide a subsidy. And I'm not sure which biennium we're talking about, whether we're talking about doing something within the 01-03 biennium or whether we're talking about action in 03-05 or both.
Mm-hmm.
I would need to know what the committee wants. You now have rules, so
mm-hmm.
You are able to act on budgets once you have approval, you know, or consensus or whatever the process is with the co-chairs. So, I can be prepared with
mm-hmm.
whatever action you want to recommend, but I need to know what
Mr.
it is.
Chairman,
one second. Katie, I think you're trying to get to an answer for us. I see you looking through the papers.
Chair George, what I'm looking at is my cash flow for the remainder of this biennium.
This biennium.
I feel that I probably can... I mean, I don't think I'm going to have a problem cash flowing a limited duration position until the end of the biennium.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think the concern I heard expressed was that if this flows normal course, there's a good possibility that there could be further reductions to your budget, meaning that that cash flow may be needed for costs in 03, 05. And that's why I was asking for clarity. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes,
I'm not prepared to give you a motion, but I am prepared to say to you, I'd like for you to take this to the leadership issue.
That will be done.
In a post-haste manner.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can have some decision in terms of where to go from here.
And again, my question is, because I would like to mm-hmm. help the committee bring forward whatever recommendation they want, what is it that the committee is wanting to do? And it doesn't have to be a motion. I just mm-hmm. you know, I would like to put together the paperwork. So,
I think what we're talking about is general fund money.
That's right.
For this position.
Right.
But we've been asked to reduce general fund and other funds, so nobody has given us a pot of money that we can use for
ed-backs. That's correct.
So we don't have any money to give you. But if you go talk to leadership, something may appear. I mean, who knows?
The name Courtney keeps appearing on some of my papers.
If I were leadership, I'd be real nervous about this one.
Mm-hmm.
The first one. It was just, was it last week or this week when the child with the seizure mm-hmm. stuff was in the paper, and then the first one out of the box would be somebody to raise money for the state fair. I mean,
mm-hmm.
it's just, we live with political reality, and mm-hmm. yeah, and much as we hate it around here, it's what it is. And so, I mean, if I were a co-chair, I might hesitate just a few weeks on this one.
Let me get back to Katie, then we'll go to Senator Morris.
Chair George, I think that this position would be funded with other funds, okay, first of all. And so, but what Robin's saying is if you reduce the general fund, then I have to backfill with my other funds. But this position, this whole package, both packages are other fund packages. So I wanted to clarify that.
I guess the question would be, would the solution be that we would push to increase your FTEs by one? Then you do that, and you then finance that in your cash flows, and if the person is performing, you'll have the cash flow to support that position. And it isn't a general fund issue right now. If you have the ability to start now with fund balances and then roll it out, that should take care of itself.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, not to short-circuit Katie, the problem is that building doesn't come online for another year, and so you can be selling, but you mm-hmm. won't be getting any revenue until the things actually occur. I mean, there may be deposits or things, but we're not talking about any real cash flow improvement until the pavilion comes online. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman,
we need to get to a list of people who'd like to testify. Can we talk about this afterwards? Because I guarantee you that we'll work on this today.
Good. Okay. That's all I have to say.
All right. Okay. And maybe you can bring that up when we're talking to the interview. We do have a few people on the list as we go to public testimony who have indicated that they have driven 100 miles or more. And John McCulley and...
John McCulley wasn't one of those.
No, I know, but he stood here and checked this, and there's apparently someone's good, John. But also, we have Brittany Sintek from Clackamas, and we have a lot of other people that are here. I'm going to ask you folks to decide whether we just start down the list or the ones that have marked have come more than 100 miles. Would you like to speak right now? Okay, they didn't speak. We're going to go down the list. We have from... apparently Polk County, Harrison, Elgin?
Harrison.
All right, come on up here, and we'll have David. Yep, David Hale, come up also, if we could. We'll get a couple of you guys up here.
David Hale from Tillamook.
From Tillamook?
Yes.
All right. Well, if you'll pull the mic close to you, whoever's going to go first, and of course, give us your name for the record.
I'm Bud Elgin. I'm a longtime resident of Salem, Oregon, and I live in Polk County. And I was home the other morning, and the fair called and says, I need to come down here at 8:30 to testify. And I was foolish enough to answer the phone, so here I am. Anyway, I was trying to listen to everything back there to properly address you. And I know that you're Chairman George, and then you're all senators, and you're all representatives. So if I don't do it right, please excuse me. But I listened to... the budget that they put out there, and I'm working on a little promotion with some of the other concessionaires out there to try to help the fair this year. we can talk about it privately sometime if you want to. I don't want to say much until it's done. I've talked to the fair. Anyway, I noticed providing less entertainment in their budget. And you provide less entertainment, you give people less reason to come. Then you take in less dollars at the gate. And then the fair goes down, and they come to you and say, oh my gosh, this happened. I don't want to see that happen. That's the reason I'm trying to, I and a bunch of us concessionaires are going to try to help the fair with a little bit. I don't want to criticize them, but I am criticizing them for agreeing to cut entertainment. I mean, that's what gets you to go. How many of you, did the chairman come? I'm sure he did, because I've seen him there. But did the rest of you come to the fair last year? Say, we need reasons for people in the state of Oregon to want to come. Because where they make their serious money is when the person pays the money to walk through the gate. I mean, they make good money off the concessionaires. They make good money off the carnival. But their serious money is the money they make off the people that pay to come in. And I'm here to say that they need reasons for people to come. And entertainment seems to be the biggest thing nationwide that I see. And then, if you have any questions, just tell me so. And then I noticed down here they're going to defer some of the repair and maintenance. I always hate to see that happen, because then it ends up being a $50 brake job is now a $200 brake job, because when the rotors started squeaking, the pads started squeaking on the rotors, you didn't do anything, and now you're buying new rotors. And that's about the end of my testimony. I'd love to answer questions. And any of you that will tell me you didn't come, I'll personally go out and buy a couple tickets from the fair and send them to you. But I'll do that after the legislature's over, so there won't be any trouble.
Senator Dukes.
But with all due respect, by the time the fair hit, we had already had 4 special sessions, and none of us volunteered to come to Salem. So normally I go, but not this last year.
Okay. Nobody wants me to buy them a couple tickets?
No, we'll come. You know, they encourage us to come so we can meet our constituents. That's a very important thing.
I did that one.
Yeah, that's actually fun.
No.
Okay, moving right on.
Oh, just yes. Quick comment. I agree with what you said. I think one of the reasons the Multnomah County Fair went into a decline that has never been reversed was they got they put the entertainment out for the lowest bidder.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's a joke.
Well, then there's there is an issue of momentum. It either goes one way or the other. Okay, any further questions?
Come on. You guys got to ask some questions.
Oh, we're watching the clock, too, so it's not that we wouldn't like to ask you. We'll talk to you later.
Well, I'm glad to hear that there's a bunch of farmers here, because I'm David Hale from Tillamook County. I'm a former resident over there for the past 35 years. I've been coming to the fair here for the past 30 years. And I also serve on a national board, Western National Board, which consists of the 7 Western National States, California, Idaho, Nevada, all the surrounding ones here, plus British Columbia. And last year was the first year that I pushed for many years to get the national show here. And last year we did at the State Fair. And I tell you, the people were really impressed. I worked with Katie for 6 months, actually we started a year ago, to get that to happen. They were so impressed that they wanted to make this place a permanent home. But there's a lot, we had to turn it down for the next year, just not ready for it, just to get Katie and the concessions we got for it, the show of cows in the one building, which was an act of Congress. They've never showed cows in the horse arena over there before, and it took a lot of persuading it, but it really went off so well that they have not talked about making a permanent home anywhere for over 20 years at this show, and they thought that this show could possibly someday be like a Madison, Wisconsin, where the World Dairy Expo is, and we're looking into issues in it and stuff, but of course with the budget and not really knowing how long the fair is going to be here and stuff, we went out and earned different organizations an additional $25,000-$30,000 to make this show happen here. and it all went into the community. People come. So, I mean, there was a big impact on it. But more important than that show, it's the 4-H and the FFA, what I've seen over the years coming here, bringing my family and showing. They are shocked that we come from a farm and people walk through the fairgrounds and don't realize and that they've never seen an animal before. It's just a great opportunity for the city people to get out and realize there is a rural country out there, there is animals, there is livestock, and there is a lot of work that goes into it. But it's rewarding just being here and seeing the faces on those kids for the first time, actually up close seeing these animals. And but as far as I've sat on a school board for 20 years, and I tell you, it's a lot easier motivating kids in 4-H and FFA than it is in school. And for the thought of being able to come out here, the highlight is being able to come out and see the state fair and be part of it. So I'm just in strong favor of it, and I come to give some support for it. And I tell you, I've been working here with all the leaders, but Katie, you guys got a real asset right there. It is great to work with her, and that's all I have to say.
Thank you two very much. We'd like to have Gail and Ryan from Yamhill County up here right now.
Morning.
Go ahead and start by introducing myself. My name is Ryan Scholes.
Ryan, pull it over just a little closer to
you. My name is Ryan Scholes. I'm the chapter president for the Newburg FFA chapter, and as well as the recently retired vice president for Lower Willamette FFA district. As of yesterday.
Yeah. And I am Gail Meeker, the Newburg FFA chapter secretary and the recently elected reporter for the Lower Willamette district. And yes.
Right. We just want to start off by letting you guys know we're here just as advocates of the fair and of what the fair does for the youth in our state. It's a great opportunity, something we all look forward to. And as I believe it was Senator Carter that said earlier that 4-H and FFA instills good values in the students who show in it. One personal story I have which I'd like to share to you is about my little cousin who's father has been in and out of jail her whole life. She lives with my grandmother. Last year, my grandmother lives next door to us, and last year I gave her one of my lambs. I raise registered Romney breed stock, and I gave her one of my Bummer lambs to raise. And she's had problems all of her life, keeping up in school, keeping up in work. Gave her a little Bummer lamb in March, told her, okay, this is your lamb, you show it. You're going to show it at the county fair and next July, and she spent hours and hours with that lamb. It improved her level of responsibility. She's doing better in school because of it, because it taught her responsibility, it taught her better values, and that's just one story of thousands of students who have been touched by being able to show at fairs like the Oregon State Fair.
That's why they say never go behind kids and animals. Now, who can go behind this young man? I have tears in my eyes. This is a story. I wouldn't come behind him to speak at this point.
That is a great story.
That's right.
Well, as Ryan's just spoke about, is the state fair, it doesn't only benefit all the 4-H and FFA kids that are there, because when we're there, we learn so much about public relations and talking to people. And I think that not only benefits us, but it also benefits all of the people that come in the state fair. I don't remember which one of you guys was talking about people that come there, and they've never seen a real live cow before, and they don't know the difference between, like, there's little kids I see come in the state fair every year, and they look at a sheep, and they say, look, Mom, it's a goat, and they don't know. And agriculture is such an important part of our national history and our economy. These people in the city, they don't know about it, and it is very important that we are there educating the public about not only FFA and the 4-H and all of the good people that are in those organizations, but also just about the agriculture industry in general. I know there's lots of booths there, not only about livestock production, that kind of stuff, but also I believe that Oregon State Forestry Service, there's much more education that takes place here beyond what happens in the barns, even though that is an extremely important and viable part of what this fair is.
Well, those of us who showed many years ago and went to the state fair, we have fond memories of it. And and you're absolutely right. Some of the things that I look back on, back in the days when race relationships weren't what they are now, I remember we ended up on the front page of a newspaper because a dear friend of mine and I were sleeping on this big Hereford bull, and they took the picture because it was a young FFA, a young man that was black, and a young FFA man that was white. And so you never know what kind of implications people will draw from what the young people are doing. Well, thank you. Any further questions? Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
John, you're up next with Alan. So if you guys want to come on up representing the Oregon Fairs Associations. Thank you, too.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm John McCulley representing the Oregon Fairs Association. I have with me Alan Westhoff from Josephine County, who is the current president of the Oregon Fairs Association. We thank you for the opportunity to appear before you this morning. We know there are a lot of other kids in the audience who want to testify, so our comments are going to be brief. I'm going to say we support the state fair budget. We heard you last session when you instructed the state fair and the county fairs to get together and do some things, and those things are moving forward and are being accomplished. And we've always had a good relationship with the state fair, but it was certainly enhanced by the encouragement that the legislature gave us last session. So I just want to let you know that, and I'll let Mr. Westhoff go from there.
Members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity. And just to reiterate a little bit of what John said, for example, we have talent contests in all the fairs now.
If you'd have you start back with your name.
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Alan Westhoff. I'm from Josephine County and manager of the fair there, as well as the president of the OFA. Some of you I've seen before. We're up here the last couple of years begging for our own needs, I guess. But the relationship has grown immensely, like our executive director of the association has alluded to. The talent contest, I think there's at least almost over half of the fairs participated in it, and it was a great thing. And one thing I want to just allude to a little bit as a county fair manager, a couple things. So you talk about 4-H and FFA. Our county, and in all its infinite wisdom, about 6 years ago decided to close the extension office. Whew. So we collected $55,000 in 4 months, put on a county fair, elected a tax service district. While we were doing that, the district attorney, we had 400 people at the fair, one of the buildings, he wanted to speak, and I thought, oh boy, what are we going to hear now? But his words were, in my 9 years here, I've never had a kid from 4-H or FFA in front of me. End of the story. That's all I have to say.
Now that saves us a lot of money right there.
Yes, it really does.
And, that's exactly right.
And I got to allude one thing that Katie was relating to with their cash flow. Our temperature last year at our fair was 108, 106, and 104, and trust me, it doesn't have to rain to have an impact on the cash flow. I bet. Are there any further questions?
Thank all right, thank you. I'm going to try this. I believe it's Nicholas Engel from Clatsop County, and then we have Brittany Sintek from Clackamas County. Come on up. Did I?
Yeah, I guess
Nicole.
I was going to
say Nicole.
Girl.
Oh, Nicole.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Hi, my name is Brittany Sintek, and I'm from Clackamas County, and I'm a Clackamas County 4-H ambassador, as well as a Oregon State 4-H ambassador, and I'm also the president of my Sandy FFA chapter, as well as the newly elected president of the Mount Hood District FFA. And I'm here just today as an ambassador of both 4-H and FFA, and we do so much with, you know, our animals throughout the year that prepares us for the fair, with the state fair being the end result and, you know, what we all work for, and it teaches you so much about responsibility and, you know, leadership, teamwork, communications, you know, anything and everything about what you're going to need in the rest of your life. But not only that, if you know, people aren't involved with 4-H and FFA, they can go to the state fair and learn about agriculture and businesses and how different organizations relate to one another. Last year they have at the Oregon State Fairgrounds the Oregon Ag Fest every year, and I went to that, and I was actually doing a project for my FFA, and we interviewed 80 children about how agriculture affects their lives. And I asked this 14-year-old boy, what if there were no farmers? And he looked at me and he said, I guess that would mean we'd all have to be vegetarians. Now, as funny as that sounds, it's reality. It's what people think. People think that their food comes solely from the supermarket. And, you know, State Fair is one of the only programs left in our state that teaches children and adults about how agriculture affects their lives. I just think it's a great opportunity for everybody who comes. Thank you.
My name's Nicole Engel.
Nicole, I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. I have terrible penmanship. I'm a junior at Astoria High School. In Astoria, Oregon. I'm also an Oregon State Ambassador from Clatsop County, and I'm just going to read you something that I have prepared. The Oregon 4-H program is similar to flavored children's medicine. Children take the medicine willingly because of the great taste, without the knowledge that it promotes good health. In the same way, youth and volunteers become involved in the 4-H program because it's fun, without realizing the immense impact it has on the state and our country. Volunteers work with youth on the county level to expand their knowledge and skills in their 4-H project area. Youth learn important life skills like taking responsibility for project, money management, learning to communicate with a team, record keeping, personal presentation, and expression of ideas and opinions. And they bring that with them when they enter the workforce. These skills are transferred into all areas of the young adult life. The State Fair is a distinct branch of what volunteers, members, and clubs do on a county level. The State Fair brings higher goals to work towards and greater competition. When youth advance in their knowledge and skills, the State Fair provides opportunities to compete on a higher level. As members, we get to work with youth and adults mentors from around the state to further enhance our knowledge and experience in our project areas. One of the greatest things that is lacking in our society, as parents have to work harder and class sizes grow bigger and bigger, is simple one-on-one time with a caring adult mentor. The opportunity for youth to attend the state fair expands their knowledge of the state and enhances their chance to work with a mentor with similar interests one-on-one. The hands-on experience gained from the state fair is then brought back to the county in clubs and shared with other 4-H members. The State Fair gives Oregonians an opportunity to showcase products, to educate, and to communicate with the citizens of Oregon, and creates an event that celebrates Oregon and Oregonians, in which it is a great honor for 4-H members to participate. Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you. You two are just too convincing, not even a single question.
We also have printed copies of our testimonies. Would you like those?
Yes, certainly. That would be great. Now we have Mary Stewart.
Senator George, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to come before you today to talk a little bit about the Oregon State Fair. I am Executive Director with Agribusiness Council of Oregon. First, I want to ask you a question. Did you have breakfast this morning?
I did.
Thank a farmer.
Thank you, farmers.
Agribusiness Council is a volunteer member organization and trade association, and we're really tasked with the effort to keep agriculture viable here in Oregon. And we do that through public education and through profitability programs. And as you know, Oregon agriculture is a very, very important part of what Oregon is. There are 41,000 farms in Oregon, 94% of which are family farms. So the way that Oregon farming looks is a little different than maybe some of the farms that you might think of back in the Midwest. We bring $8.6 billion to Oregon's economic engine each year. We take good care of the land and water, generation after generation. And we certainly hope that you look for, ask for Oregon products where you shop and where you eat. Agribusiness Council recognizes the excellent job that Katie Cannon and her staff have been accomplishing at the Oregon State Fair and its management. We also recognize that it's a huge undertaking. We see the Oregon State Fair as an excellent vehicle for public education about agriculture. And we also see that there's the potential to do more. And we've been talking together about what might be some additional educational things that we might do together. So we strongly encourage you to support the budget that they have requested to help this very important public education venue stay viable. Thank you very much. Senator George, committee members, do you have any questions? Okay. Thank you for the time.
Thanks a lot. Mm-hmm. Now, we have no one else signed up, but we would be, I would have a first. Okay, certainly. Come on. Please identify yourself for the record and then proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ron Herbison. I know I'm not signed up, but I appreciate the chance to testify here today. I'm here to ask you to support the Oregon State Fair and Exposition Center because it is not just a one-year event. The Exposition Center is used year-round for many different events. In fact, last weekend, the Oregon High School Equestrian Teams. This is a fairly new organization, one that, when it was started about 5 years ago, I sat on the state board as a youth member, and I have now seen it grow well over 700% in membership. I was there last weekend as a judge. I was judging their horse show. Farm life, it brings a lot to the state. It is what the state was founded on. It brings a lot to the kids of the state. I want to share a story with you, a story about responsibility, and I'll make this kind of quick. My family had a family reunion out at our farm outside in rural Lane County, where we have a farm where we have horses, a vineyard of Pinot Noir grapes, cows. We have a nice farm. It was about 10 years ago. We had a family reunion out there, and we had all of our city. I call them city kids. All my city kid cousins out. We went down into our lower pasture and just playing around, and we started throwing things around at each other. And what we were throwing around were cow patties. And my brother and I have a twin brother, we knew exactly what they were.
You knew when to pick them up and when not.
Exactly. And one of my cousins found that out, exactly. And we were throwing these around, and when we got done, they called us for dinner, said, now make sure you guys go wash up. And they're like, well, why? And then we're like, and then they finally told them what they were playing with. And they absolutely freaked. And the whole point of this purpose, the story is responsibility. Living out in the farm, in a rural community, it gave me a sense of responsibility, of hard work. And I just look at where I am right now and where my cousins are. They lived in the city. They did not have the same types of influence that I have. And they're doing well. Some of them are doing better than others. But look, where I am right now, I am pursuing my dream. I'm here working in the state capitol as a legislative aide for Representative Greg Smith. I'm here. This is what I want to do. I'm attending college. None of my other cousins in the city did attend college. They're working jobs they'll probably be there for the rest of their lives. But that's fine if that's what they want to do. But the responsibility that was shown to me through agriculture and through farm life, with the help of Oregon State Fair and the county fairs, was just is unbelievable, and I can only, that's the only thing I can attribute to where I am right now, and I just want encourage you to support that, because we can't take that away.
You found out you could be successful and you could achieve when you didn't think you could. That's what I see from so many of the young people. They learn
exactly
that lesson. I can do it. Any questions?
Ooh, well, it could be that the cousins are so emotionally scarred.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee.
Well, thanks to everyone for being here today. And we hope we can do good this session and not do harm. And so with that, I'm going to close the public hearing and the public testimony on Senate Bill. Oh, Senator Carter. Oh, I was going to, you know, to tell you the truth, that's who I thought I was calling up at the time. Would you like to say something? Oh, you're okay? Are you here to support?
No, I'm here for internship with Senator Greg Smith.
Oh, you are. All right.
They dragged you
now, are you one of the kids in the pasture? Or? Okay. Okay, with the tap of the gavel, we will be adjourned. Thanks.